Our first speaker has been a leading figure in the discussion of Social Security for recent months, his book I just showed you. Mike Tanner is actually the author of 8 other books, including a book called The End of Welfare. He is a past director of research at the Georgia Public Policy Foundation. He was also legislative director with the American Legislative Exchange Council. He's currently director of health and welfare at the Cato Institute and also directs their project on Social Security privatization. In the popular media, his articles and articles about his work are appearing almost daily. I just heard that there was one appeared in, I guess it was today's Washington Post?
Saturday.
Saturday, sometime. Anyway, his articles have appeared in Wall Street Journal and USA Today and many, many city papers around the country as well as various magazines, and he appears regularly on different national TV talk shows. So I'm pleased to introduce Mike Tanner.
Well, thank you all very much, and I appreciate you having me out here, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you tonight about an issue that, Monica notwithstanding, is probably the most important political issue in Washington today. I really do believe it's going to dominate the political debate of this coming year and possibly of the next couple of years. And that's Social Security reform and whether or not we need a new Social Security system. And whenever I come out to groups like this, whenever I start talking about the need for a new Social Security system, usually the first thing someone says is, why? I mean, after all, Social Security is now 63, going on 64 years old, and it's really done its job over that period of time. It has remarkably reduced the rate of poverty among the elderly. It has enabled millions of seniors to retire with security they might not otherwise be able to do. But in looking only at what Social Security has done in the past, is only part of the picture. In many ways, it's sort of like the fellow who jumped off the top of the Empire State Building. And as he was falling, people would gather at the windows at each floor to watch him go by. This was New York, after all. And as he passed by, they could hear him say, well, so far, so good. The problem, of course, is at the bottom, you get a big splat. And unfortunately, that's exactly what's going to happen with Social Security. There's a big splat coming. And it's going to be a much bigger splat, and it's going to come much sooner than I think most people believe. You see, in just about 14 years, in the year 2013, Social Security will begin to run a deficit. That is, it'll begin to spend more on benefits than it's taking in revenue. I think all of you can understand that when you've got more money going out than you've got coming in, there's a problem. Well, of course, nothing's never quite that simple in Washington. So in Washington, they actually have a theory that says come 2013, when they have more money going out than coming in, they're going to go back to the Social Security Trust Fund. And they're going to take the money from the trust fund and use that money to continue to pay benefits until about 2032, after which the trust fund will be exhausted and Social Security will only be able to pay about 3/4 of the benefits that's promised with the revenue stream that it has. It's a nice theory. It has one tiny flaw. There ain't no trust fund. And the simple fact is, all of the money in the trust fund was spent a long time ago. What happens is the money from that trust fund is borrowed by the federal government, and really, it can't do much of anything else. I mean, the government is actually sort of structurally incapable of holding money. So it lends that money to the Treasury, and that money is then spent on the general operating expenses of the federal government, everything from roads and bridges, national defense, foreign aid, welfare, Ken Starr's latest investigation, whatever. And it leaves behind a trust fund that's composed, about half of the trust fund is composed of government bonds. And a government bond is essentially an IOU. It is a promise against future tax revenues. It may be a good promise, but it's still just a promise against future tax revenues. And the other half of the trust fund consists of an accounting entry which attributed interest to those bonds. There's no actual money there. I think Senator Moynihan has probably explained this best when he says, just consider what would happen if Social Security never ran a surplus and there never was a trust fund. Well, beginning around the year 2013, when Social Security begins to spend more than it's taking in, if it's going to continue to pay all the benefits that's promised, the government has three choices. It can raise taxes, it can borrow the money, or it can find it somewhere in the budget, else in the budget. All right, now we've got a trust fund. What happens? Well, beginning 2013, they have to go back to the trust fund and start redeeming the bonds. Where do they get the money to pay the bonds? Government has to raise taxes, borrow it, or find it somewhere else in the budget. Makes absolutely no difference. Now, that means that come 2013, which is not that far off, they're going to have to start looking to younger workers to make up that difference. And those young workers are going to get hit with a huge tax increase. Right now, the payroll tax on Social Security is 12.4%. Three out of four Americans pays more in Social Security taxes than they pay in federal income tax. It's 12.4% now. If they're going to raise taxes in order to keep Social Security solvent, that tax would have to increase to at least 18.3%. And I wish that was the bad news, but actually that's the good news. Didn't even talk about Medicare in there, but I think I will just for a minute, because the total payroll tax is 15.3%. It includes Medicare. Well, Medicare is in even worse shape than Social Security. It actually begins running a deficit around 2004, its trust funds exhausted around 2010, and its costs are escalating rapidly. If you actually want to include Medicare in there as well, then the payroll tax has to rise from 15.3% to about 28%. And that's still the good news, because what I was just using is what the government calls its intermediate projections. Every year the government issues a new set of forecasts. They issue an optimistic set of projections that have never been right in the history of the program, a set of intermediate projections which are right about half the time, and a set of pessimistic projections which are right about half the time. If those pessimistic forecasts, which assume unlikely events such as, say, a recession in the next 30 years, if they are more accurate, then the total payroll tax, according to the trustees of the Social Security system, the total payroll tax necessary to pay both Medicare and Social Security benefits would have to equal about 40%. Obviously, that's not sustainable. The other alternative is you could cut Social Security benefits by somewhere between 25 and 33%, either directly by cutting benefits or indirectly by raising retirement age or so on. Again, I think that's not sustainable. Now, would it? But let's assume that a miracle happens. Let's assume we find a way to finance all this. We find a way to fix all that financial problem. Would we be out of the Social Security wilderness? And I would suggest that the answer is no. Even if that were the case, and believe me, miracles could happen. People have explained to me that if we just sort of double our economic growth in the next 20 years or so, then we have no more problems. Someone from the AFL-CIO with a straight face explained to me that all we have to do to fix Social Security is to allow in an additional 1 million immigrants every year for the next 30 years and then send them home before they start to collect their benefits. Okay. But let's assume Deus ex machina, we find a way to fix the Social Security solvency problem. You're still left with the fact that Social Security has become a lousy deal for young people. It was a good deal. Someone who retired 20 years ago got back everything they paid into Social Security with interest and a heck of a lot more besides. But if you retired this morning, the Social Security check you get will have a real rate of return on the money you paid in of about 2.2%. And for young workers, they can expect a rate of return, if they're lucky, of 1%. Most of them will be zero, and a lot of them will actually receive a negative rate of return. And if you raise taxes or you cut benefits in order to keep the system solvent, they're all going to get a negative rate of return. Actually lose money on the Social Security system, get back less in benefits than they pay in taxes. So it's not just one Social Security crisis. It's not just the financing crisis. At the same time you fix the financing crisis, you have to raise the rate of return and find a way to make it a good deal again for young people. Just real quick, just mention very quickly a couple of other problems with Social Security that also have to be fixed at the same time. Social Security has a lot of unfairness in it. Social Security penalizes the poor, minorities, and working women. Essentially, it penalizes the poor and minorities primarily because how much you get back depends on how long you live. You know, if you live to be 100, you do pretty well in Social Security. Drop dead at 66, that's not quite such a good deal. Fact is, in this country, the poor don't live as long as the rich. A lot of reasons for that, but it's an unfortunate fact of life. Same thing is true with a lot of ethnic groups in this country. African Americans, at all income levels, have a shorter life expectancy than do whites. So they get back less, kind of on a comparable basis, than a white counterpart. Working women are penalized by what's called the dual entitlement rule. Under that rule, it means that if you, essentially a woman, and I say a woman here, is a spouse in the law, but about 96% of the cases it's actually a woman, is entitled to 50% of her husband's benefits, whether or not she works, whether or not she pays any Social Security tax. But that means that if she goes to work, and she earns half of her husband's wages because of disparity in pay and so on, she pays Social Security tax on her earnings, but doesn't receive one dime in additional benefits. The money she pays in taxes is just lost. And they also suffer, the poor suffer, because there's no inheritability of assets. So if you take a woman who's a single mother, works maybe two jobs her whole life, now her kids are 18, so they're no longer eligible for survivor's benefits, and she drops dead. The money she's paid in taxes is lost. Just gone. There's no money that she can then hand down to her kids so that they could go to college or start a small business or something like that. Just lost. That's a problem that has to be fixed at the same time we fix the solvency of Social Security. Fourth, we have to worry about the impact on the economy. We have the lowest national savings rate in the world, among any major industrialized nation in the world, I should say. And we have to look at Social Security as being one of the causes of that. The studies indicate that what happens is that people save less because they count on Social Security. But since Social Security doesn't really save any money, they're substituting fantasy savings for real savings, and it's depressing our overall national savings rate. And it's also having an impact on the economy because 12.4% tax on labor is essentially a terribly regressive and a terrible way to get people to work, and it has a terrible effect on productivity. Lastly, I would just point out there's a question of dignity involved. You know, I think most people, at least most of the seniors that I talk to, believe that they have a right to their Social Security. They've paid taxes all those years, so they should have a legal right to those Social Security benefits. I hear that talked about all the time. Social Security is an earned right. It's guaranteed. Well, no, it's not. You see, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Fleming versus Nestor in 1960. That there is no legal right to Social Security benefits based on having paid Social Security taxes your whole life. Government can take away those benefits anytime they want. In fact, there's discussions all the time in Congress. We're going to raise the retirement age, we're going to change the CPI, we're going to do just this, just that, take away benefits. Well, the simple fact is, you've got no legal right to your Social Security benefits. That means you work your whole life, you play by the rules, you pay your taxes, and when you turn 65, you have to go hat in hand to the government and say, please, please give me some money to retire on. I don't think that's the way we should be treating our seniors. Let me just close with this. Social Security was invented in the 19th century. That was a time, you know, in Prussia, people communicated by giving someone on horseback a letter to ride it across the country. Now here we are, beginning of the 21st century, the internet age. You know, push a button and your message goes across the world. Shouldn't there be a 21st century Social Security system and not a 19th century one? Thank you all very much. I really look forward to the question and answer session.